We have talked about seagrass restoration a number of times for what's good in Tampa Bay, but it goes beyond just feeding manatees, and that's been one of the things we've talked about the most. Dani Richter's joining us. She's Director of Philanthropy at Fish and Wildlife Foundation of Florida. And Dani, this story intrigued me because you've done an amazing amount of work just to replant all this seagrass, but as I just said, it goes beyond feeding the wildlife. There is so much more to it. Good morning. Thank you for your time. And let's introduce everybody, number one, to the Fish and Wildlife Foundation of Florida.
Our mission is to conserve the fish and wildlife in the state of Florida and the habitats that they live in.
Where do you start when you have an entire state to take care of? I mean, priorities have to be very difficult to sort out sometimes.
Yes, there's a lot of things happening in the state of Florida. We were created by the state legislature in 1994 to be the citizen support organization for FWC and its partners. So we really work with FWC to identify projects that need, you know, some jumpstart in funding and things like that, or some gap funding to help them cross the finish line.
Now, when you talk about being the citizens support group for that, that means a lot of volunteers, doesn't it?
Actually, it does not.
Okay.
They have a very robust volunteer program. But for us, that just means being able to raise and give away funding to FWC and its partners.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, let's start with that fundraising, because obviously there's a great need when it comes to our shorelines and our environment in Florida. Has it become more difficult over the years, or has it become easier?
I think that's a hard question to answer. That's a good question, though. I think that there are a lot of people in Florida that know the uniqueness that we have here and the variety of habitats and ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And I think those people are becoming very educated on the challenges that Florida faces, and they're very inspired to act and protect what we have here.
Oh, that, and that's what we want to hear, especially with the storms we've had lately here in Tampa Bay that have done so much damage to the dunes that have just been replanted. But the good news is that things are looking a lot better. You work with Sea and Shoreline with planting all of these seagrass plants. For someone that's not familiar with Sea and Shoreline, let's tell them about that, too.
Yes, Sea and Shoreline is the leading expert in the state of Florida for this type of habitat restoration. They also have projects outside of Florida, but one of their biggest projects was restoring Crystal River.
And that's a real success story, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And that was the community of Crystal River really got that together and led that effort. It's a really inspiring story.
When we talk about restoring a river, I mean, that sounds like a lot of work. Where do you start with something like that?
For us, it started with identifying rivers that might have good water quality for this type of habitat restoration. For other projects, like I know Sea and Shoreline's Crystal River, it can start with sucking out all the muck that's on the bottom of the river.
Mm.
So all that muck releases a lot of nitrates into the water,
yeah,
and that can impact the water quality. So depending on the river that you've identified, you might have to start there with removing that muck. But luckily for us and our sites in the IRL, the tributaries along the IRL,
yeah,
we had pretty good record of decent water quality, and so that wasn't needed. So for us, we had to look at a variety of factors like salinity and water clarity and water flow, and work with FWC's biologists to identify where we thought this might be most successful.
There's a significant human impact on any of these areas we talk about. We get a lot of winter visitors this time of year that you want to flock to the river and the springs and see the manatees. What kind of advice can you give people when they visit, things to do and things not to do?
That's a great question. I would say, you know, if you're out and you see trash, pick it up. That's a great thing to do. If there are signs about areas to not go in or specific trails that you should stay on in these areas, or if you're on the water and you're paddling or swimming and there are specific areas that are roped off, you know, follow the signs. There's a lot of informational material out in the spots where you can see manatees that tell you what not to do and what to do. So definitely follow those. And again, if you can pick up some trash while you're out, that's great.
Yeah, never leave anything behind but memories. Just
yeah,
keep it clean while you're out there. They planted over 100,000 seagrass plants, and that's an unbelievable amount. And those cost money, of course. So what sort of fundraising activities are you going to have coming up that someone could possibly get involved with?
Yes, absolutely. So it's been really, really inspiring to see people show up for the manatee. We've been doing a lot of different types of fundraising. Many of these sites were funded through grants from mm-hmm. private foundations or corporations. But we've also received a lot of support across the country and even outside of the continental U.S. And other countries to support the manatee. We also had like a very grassroots campaign to help with these restoration efforts, as well as a supplemental feeding trial for the manatee that happened in Cape Canaveral. And we had folks, you know, from Alaska or, you know, places that are so far from Florida, and they would write in and they would say, you know, so many years ago, I visited Florida and I encountered a manatee, and they nicknamed that manatee, or they had just such a beautiful experience seeing that manatee that it stuck with them for decades and inspired them to want to protect them all those years later.
It really is very inspiring. I've been down to the TECO site a number of times when the manatees come in, and that's incredible. And you hear those conversations where people don't really understand why they're there and why am I seeing, I'm seeing manatees and I'm seeing sharks and I'm seeing stingrays. It's an amazing experience, and it's a good chance to educate them at the same time, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And kind of similarly in the Indian River Lagoon, there are power plants there that are producing this warm water that the manatees, you know, flock to in the winter. So this is where the manatees come every winter, and this is what they're used to. And so there's been this question of, will they adapt and go someplace else? But this is where they've been going for, you know, decades and decades to escape the cold weather. And that's why this is so important to restore their food supply there.
It really is. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd like to pass along to my listeners?
This has been a really fun experiment. Each river is so different and has its own unique challenges. So what we're really trying to do with the sites that we have so far is figure out what is the best practices for this specific area. For instance, in the Loxahatchee River, we've had to kind of change some of the methodology. That was our first site that unfortunately was hit by a hurricane. And so the generic formula of how to do this is you plant grass, you have to fence it off somehow or use cages to block it off from the manatees or other herbivores for about 6 months so that grass can root. That way when it's, you know, grazed on, it's not just completely uprooted. And so we've in each site gotten to experiment with which species of grass do we plant here? What lengths of grass do we plant here? What genotype for some of the grasses? Because some genotypes are more or less resilient to salinity or turbidity and things like that. So it's been really great to do this work and get out there and figure out what exactly, how should this be done? And that information will be valuable for anyone, not just our organization, but anyone who wants to get involved in these efforts.
It sounds like you learn something new every day.
Yes, truly, truly, especially in my job, not being a biologist. I have learned so much through this process, but collectively, FWC and CN Shoreline has also learned so much because each site is so different.
How did you get involved with this? As you say, you're not a biologist, but you sure sound like one.
That is very kind. Well, our organization started reading, you know, many of the members on staff started reading these reports about starving manatees in the winter of 2021. And, you know, we all love manatees. I remember the first time I saw a manatee in the Tampa Bay. And so we were all really inspired to act and connected with FWC to see that, you know, what can we do? Mm-hmm. But it's become one of our top priorities for fundraising. I'm sharing this information with donors, which is why I've become well-versed in the project. But everyone on our team is particularly passionate about this.
I'm sure. You don't get involved with a project like this without having a real passion for something. Mm-hmm. If someone would like to volunteer, get involved, become a donor, where can they go for more information?
They can go to wildlifeflorida.org.
Perfect. And everything's going to be right there. Anything that's coming up in the future that we want to let people know about, in addition to the seagrass restoration?
Not currently on the radar.
All right. Well, we'll stay tuned then, and we'll talk again. That'll work out.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, Danny, thank you so much. Danny Richter, the Director of Philanthropy with the Fish and Wildlife Foundation of Florida. For more information, just go to the links. We'll have those up there for What's Good in Tampa Bay. Danny, thank you once again.
Thank you so much.